From behind the invisible bars that encompass the reality, we call Gitmo Nation. This is your weekly tune-up. We call it No Agenda. Coming to you from a sunny southern England in Gitmo Nation East, I'm Adam Curry.
And in Gitmo Nation West, also known as Northern Silicon Valley.
The place that doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. But I tell people to tell the cab driver to take you there.
John, let me start this week's show off with some excellent news. You ready?
Okay.
We have now reached over 100,000 listeners per episode.
Oh, we have.
In fact, 2 weeks ago we did 100. It's progressive, obviously, so, you know, people are behind and catch up. 2 weeks ago we did 135,000, and we're already over 101,000 for last week.
Well, I think we all we need to do now is plead.
Beg.
For it to double it. We need to get to a quarter of a million.
Yeah, that's our next milestone. But you know what? We didn't even do anything. We just focused on it, and it happened.
No, we did 1 week. Remember, we begged and begged people to tell a friend.
Yeah, but that's different. You know, you and I had talked about, you know, getting celebrity guests on, you know, getting Britney Spears on. We had all kinds of fabulous plans.
Just goes but we're to show. Too lazy.
Yeah, that would be it. Too busy or just too damn lazy. I can also I can really tell though the audience is up because I'm getting more hate mail than usual.
Oh, hate mail. That's a good sign.
Yeah. And,
you know, what do they hate you for? What is with the hate?
A lot of hate, interestingly enough, about my comments on vaccination.
Oh, right.
I mean, like a lot of people in the medical field.
What did you
field.
Say? I don't even remember. You had on this show, or was it Daily Source Code?
No, well, it's been back and forth. We talked about it briefly last week. In fact, one of those emails you were copied on, and I can't remember what it was, honestly, John, but I'm sure it was me saying something to the effect of, don't let the government stick needles in your children.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, but it's just, you know, after doing this for, doing podcasts for 4 years, been in radio since I was 15, you know when the audience grows, you can just feel it. So welcome, everybody. Come on
Now we'll be correct. Now we'll suck.
Yeah, exactly. Come into Uncle Ernie's holiday camp. What we fiddle about.
So I understand it was really still, it was like lousy weather back there. People were getting flooded. Schools were being closed.
Yeah, unbelievably, today has been absolutely fantastic. But yes, in the Midlands and in the north where that always happens, just because of the geography, flooding. But the weather has just been extremely bad. Until, of course, they flipped on the Large Hadron Collider. Now it's all clearing up. So I guess there's some benefit to it. But now the worst thing actually is the wheat crop. And no one's really talking about that here. But you can see
they grow wheat.
Yeah. For bread and stuff.
In England?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Huh. Well, what do you think they make those crop circles in?
Oh, I thought now that you mention it, yeah, I guess they would be. Mm-hmm. You could with something.
So the problem is that the rain wiped out it's a third of the normal crop that they would have. So prices of wheat are now triple what they normally are, and now they're gearing up to import wheat from Germany. Interestingly enough, who had a banner year, they did 20 or 25% better than normal, but. It's rough, man. Cause, I mean, it's you think just bread, but I think wheat is used in a lot of stuff, so it is going to impact food prices once again.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, when the food prices go up, they don't usually come down.
Now, well, look at gasoline.
Because a lot of this
oil going down, gasoline going up. It makes so much sense.
My gasoline's going down around here. I don't know what you're talking about. And the oil prices are going to collapse. I mean, right now you see them just teetering.
Oh, yeah. Once it gets, I think the next bottom is probably, it's got to be like 95 or something. And then it's just going to slide all the way down to 60.
That'd be nice if it gets back to 40.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to manipulate
it down
that far.
They're cutting back production. They're doing all these things now to try to prop it up because they're freaked.
Well, I was talking to my buddy, my Halliburton friend. Who works for a UK company which does all infrastructure for oil drilling projects. He knows a lot about this stuff. And he says that today, to get oil out of the ground, the actual infrastructure and people It's already around $40 just to, $40 to $45 per barrel just to get it out of the ground. It's, double that if you're trying to get it out of, like the North Sea as an example. And that's because there's just, the equipment isn't there. The people aren't there. They cannot recruit enough people, to do the surveys, to do the work. I mean, it's unbelievable. The supply and demand of the workforce and the materials has just boosted that price, the ground floor base price up.
I wonder what they pay somebody to be on an oil rig.
Oh, it's huge money. Oh, dude, I know a cab driver, Taxi Eric, who you will meet when you go to Amsterdam because he will be driving you around. And he was on the on one of the drilling platforms in the North Sea. And, you know, it was like, I think it was 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And he said, you know, it was great money. He said he had to stop because it was just, it was freaking him out how dangerous it really was. But, yeah, it's like those, crab.
What is
boats.
Great money? I mean, what are we talking about here?
At least double what he's making on the cab. So, you know, for manual labor, I think great work.
We need to get some specifics.
I'll
is it $100
him.
An hour?
I'll ask him. But
I know the guys. I have a couple of friends who ended up going to Iraq, and they live in the green zone. They're private contractors.
Huge money, I'll bet.
Huge money, yeah. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, like $200,000-$300,000 a year, just to.
I've actually heard that they've paid off. You know, there's like $35,000 spot bonuses to lieutenants and captains in Iraq.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's the surge.
Maybe it's just it's a surge of money, surge of taxpayers' money.
A money surge, that's right. speaking of oil and surge, the big news this weekend over here in the United Kingdom is the bankruptcy of XL Travel.
XL what?
XL, I think it's Travel or Aviation. Let me see. I think it's a package tour company.
And, why would that be big news?
Because 89,000...
We got Lehman Brothers going down the tubes.
Listen to me. I'm getting to your bottom in a second. XL has 89,000 Britons who are now in vacation destinations who can't get back.
Oh, I see.
you think that's a problem?
That's a good number.
50,000 passengers stranded who booked with XL tour operators. 10,000 who booked with the airline because it's a combo deal, or you can get it separately. 25,000.
Oh, were these like?
Oh shit!
I'm sorry. These like. No, the connection got weird.
It's okay. I got you.
The are these like charter flights? Is that the reason? Because normally when I book through, if I'd book through a travel company, they'd give me some tickets. I'd have a ticket, a round trip on United, and I wouldn't get stranded.
No. They have their own aircraft, and it's kind of an interesting company. It's a hybrid, so they typically book vacations with the flight, but you can also just book a flight because they're so big. They had 200,000 advanced bookings. Those people, their money's gone. The chairman, Philip White, he was crying on television, dude. Literally crying. Although, I don't get it. I mean, what the hell is the regulator over here doing? If these guys were in such dire straits, you'd think that maybe you want to check on their maintenance and some other stuff. They knew about it.
So what was the rationale for the folding?
So they had converted a line of credit from Barclays into a loan, and then Barclays said, okay, that's it, no more money. And, all of their, suppliers, i.e. landing fees, airports, etc., and of course fuel, required immediate cash payments. And so it just, it's just that magical moment.
Cascaded thanks to Barclays.
Thanks to Barclays, I would say. Huh. Yeah. Well, you know, but Barclays was probably right.
You know, apparently,
the thing that's gotten so expensive for any airline, certainly in Europe, is the CO2 tax. That's what's really killing everybody. And
I'm sorry,
the CO2 tax.
This is where it's headed here too. This some bogus tax.
Yeah.
Hey, let's let me see here. Let's what else can we tax these guys for? You know, I like the CO2 idea because it's kind of so nebulous. You know, you can't prove it one way or the other. So let's just tax them for their emissions. Aren't they already being taxed for the gas when they buy it going in? Shouldn't that account for this? No. Let's just make another tax out of the blue, and we'll call it CO2 tax, and nobody will complain about it because all these green freaks will think it's just cool.
I'm sure you blogged this somewhere, and I can't remember who it was. It was some official, and he came out and said, you need to eat less meat to save on carbon emissions. Did you read that story?
And yeah.
It's like amazing. It's like, you know, because this is what's going to happen next. First, they're going to say, look, okay, you've got 400 head of cattle. They all take a dump about
this
four times a
vegans.
Day.
This is all the vegans. I'm telling you, this is a bunch of vegetarian, vegan, whatever you want to call them, people behind all this.
It's the greenies, man. Damn greenies. So the next thing, of course, as they've now successfully taxed one of the four elements of life, being sunlight, water, oxygen, and carbon dioxide, is you're going to be taxed on how much you speak.
It could be. We're toast.
You only can have. Particularly, well, we get double taxed because what comes out of our mouth is bullshit, which is also, of course, harmful to the environment. So.
Methane.
It's lethal methane emitting from their orifices. Hmm. All right, you ready for Lehman Brothers? Is that bottom there yet, John? You sure? You think there's a bottom here?
Yeah, we're bouncing around it. I can feel it.
Dude, it's Lehman. It's Washington Mutual. It's Merrill Lynch. And this morning, I don't know if you read the papers yet. So first, the Congressional Budget, Office, I think, or Oversight? This Nuttall guy or whatever, Nussle, whatever his name is. He said, I think Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac should be on the books of the U.S. government. And boy, that got turned around. Someone held a gun to his head, said, I don't think you'd really want to say that, dude. So now he's pulled back. It's funny. Yeah, this guy is a total reptilian. He's an insider. He used to work at the Treasury. His wife is connected. I'm looking for his name. But it's that's a pretty big deal. Here it is. What's his name? Jim Nussle. Director of the White House Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah, these guys should be told not to talk to anybody ever.
So that's kind of his job.
Oh.
But the way I understand it is...
Doesn't mean he has to do it.
That's true. The way I understand it is that the Treasury is now, of course, they're doing another weekend deal. And Paulson has said, no way, we're not going to bail him out. Lehman has the same debt window, you know, the discount window facility. So, you know, you guys, you other bankers, let's go figure it out. We split it up into pieces, and no one wants to do it. Which means to me that this just, either there's no value left in the company, or it's too damn difficult to actually figure out what the value is.
You know, it was weird. The guy, there's like some guy came out with a book on this and on Lehman going, or Lehman, whatever you want to call him, going under about, I don't know, it was about three or four, five months ago. And he was on CNBC being grilled by that morning crew. And the guy was pretty, he says, here's the questions that need to be answered. And he was talking about some things that were on the books that had no explanation. And he says, and I've talked to the company directly and they've never answered these questions and blah, blah, blah. And these guys were just kind of like grilling him as though, you know, this can't possibly be true. And I was kind of stunned by, although I was not totally stunned, but there's still this wishful thinking in the community out there, the people who cover this topic for the public, you know, on CNBC or wherever they are. And this includes the thing about the oil manipulation that we've documented to death, and the fact that it was, you know, this illegal, essentially speculation done.
That's a cover. That's not the real. That's not what's really happening, John. It's being manipulated. But the whole traitor thing, that's just a front. I'm convinced of it now. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, and well, you digressed into the sea. What are you talking about? Now, don't tell me that you think it's space aliens.
Only if you make my, if you give me my theme tune. No, this is the IMF and the World Bank. They're manipulating it. They know exactly what they're doing. And they're doing it, and they're successful at it because they're bankrupting the Middle East. Look at what's happened with Russia. A big part of it, of course, is because of the Georgia conflict. You know, people are going belly up there. Oil companies freaking out. I think this is completely orchestrated. And at the same time, what is everyone calling for? What are the Republicans calling for? Drill, baby, drill.
Well, orchestrated to what end?
It's a financial orchestration.
To what end? To bankrupt the Middle East, you said.
Yeah, to bankrupt the Middle East, to bankrupt Russia. To get rid of the, I think the whole financials, I think the plan was, honestly, now that I look at it, the plan was probably to destroy the whole system to start off with.
The whole system?
The whole financial system. And oil is tied right into that. It's money.
To what end?
To what end? To kill people.
I mean, to what end? I mean, there's got to be a goal.
Yes, the goal is to kill people, to reduce the population.
Why? Or to reduce the population. Yes. Is this where you're going with this?
That's certainly a direction I'm starting to look, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
I'm not quite ready to expand on it, but
well, mull it over.
It's all a part of the same thing. It's the same thing with the vaccinations.
So how there comes the letters.
That's why I mentioned it.
So what have you been drinking recently?
No, man, nothing at all. I've been smoking. I haven't been smoking either.
That's the problem.
No, I'm completely clear-headed. Completely.
So you're not drinking tea, you're not doing anything.
Actually, today I have, I decided to change and I'm drinking coffee for the show.
Oh, God.
Mm. It's, well.
You're not a coffee personality.
You want to laugh? Of course
okay.
You do. So I decided to try out some of the freeze-dried coffee that I bought, which I've stocked up on with a number of other essential life-saving ingredients for when the food crisis hits Britain. So I can make all kinds of stuff here at home, and I figured I'd try some, see how it tastes, and it's not bad.
You're drinking instant coffee?
Freeze-dried, yep.
It's all freeze-dried nowadays, I think.
It's a fine
Dutch blend.
There
must be some old evaporative coffees left.
Oh, dude, here's the big news from over here. Did you hear about the tunnel fire?
Yeah, I heard about that. That did get it. In fact, we blogged it.
That was pretty severe.
I guess it closed down the one side of the tunnel, transport side.
Yeah, for it's now going on 3 days. I mean, this thing burned for like 9 hours, 1,000 degrees centigrade. And what's interesting to me, John, is not one single newspaper. And I just went to the newspaper stand to pick up my Financial Times Weekly or Weekend. Not one single newspaper even hinted of terrorism. Even though there were explosions, there was fires, all kinds of shit going on. How come no one talks about that? What is up with that?
There was some mention of it in our side of the...
All right. Well, not over
but it
here.
Wasn't, like, played up much. I mean, Bush didn't come out or anything. I mean, it was just kind of in passing, and they decided it wasn't. What was the final determination of what caused this fire?
They still have not been able to explain that, but they did. There were all kinds of chemicals, really toxic shit. Could probably find... I actually looked it up. I forgot the name of it. Phenol, that's what it was.
Phenol. Nasty stuff.
That's very nasty stuff. So there was a tanker full of phenol, and that went
phenol.
Up. Yeah.
Stuff. They shouldn't allow that in the channel.
Well, they can make
phenol on the continent. They don't need this ship. Where was it coming from?
Well, I guess it was coming from the UK, but it's very easy to make, I understand.
Yeah, phenol is just...
It's like a byproduct.
It's a commonly used chemical in the industrial in chemical production of all kinds of things, plastics and drugs and everything else.
Yeah, they also used to inject that into people in World War II and kill them. according to
what I used to work with this stuff in Union Oil. It's very interesting. One of the things about it is you, it's like a lot of these other chemicals. You, anyone who's been a professional chemist for any period of time realizes they all do this. It's, especially when you're working with some of these toxic materials, you're sniffing yourself constantly. Because the stuff splashes. You get like little micro droplets on yourself.
Yeah.
And you'll sniff your hand. You'll just be sniffing away all over your hand just to see if you, because you can spot a micro droplet of phenol if it lands on you.
Because it starts to burn into your flesh?
Well, it does a little bit. I mean,
a little.
It does, but you can smell it. It has this very distinctive odor. It's actually quasi pleasant. And then you just wash it off, or you put some, you know, some something to counteract it, just to change its structure. But you'd get, you know, you do that. But phenol is, the problem with phenol is it turns into, apparently when it is absorbed through the skin, this is from years ago, I can't even remember the details, but it's absorbed into the skin is the problem if you get it on you. And it is slightly corrosive, but it gets on your, gets into your system, and then it goes through the liver and kidneys and turns into benzene, which is really a bad thing to have inside you. And it's a carcinogenic.
So I'm told. I'm reliably informed.
So I don't know, but yeah,
I'm looking at the most recent article, see if they have any news on what caused it. But some of the eyewitness accounts were that there were multiple explosions. Here today it says temperatures reached as high as 1,000 degrees Celsius, according to the French Interior Minister.
It's interesting because I don't see where you'd get exploded unless you're getting some kind of weird reactions. I mean, what kind of chemicals were they carrying in these tankers? Because phenol is not explosive, you know, per se.
Yeah, I'll have to look. That was in yesterday's paper, I think. So apparently they said it was going to resume this morning. I haven't heard any news reports that actually did resume yet. But I saw all the lorries, as we call them, all lined up, and I'm like, oh man, that could disrupt the supplies.
Well, you know, it seems to me that if it was terrorism, they would have made a big deal about it.
Or maybe it was actually, you know, like a real honest mistake and something went wrong, and it wasn't one of those planned false flag operations that they usually dish out, and they didn't have time to get to the press office for this one.
You know, that most of your stuff is pretty wacky, but that one
that's out there, right?
I mean, that one's almost, that's within the range of, well, you know, it's possible.
Well, let's talk for a second about the liquid bombers on airplanes then. Another huge news story this week in the United Kingdom. I hope that trickled over to Gitmo Nation West.
No, I didn't hear this one.
You're kidding me. Oh, my goodness.
More liquid bombers?
No, this
they must be sick of these guys bringing in all these little bottles of liquids.
You're going to love this. So they convicted, out of the seven guys, the ringleader, they had to let go. He, you know, they couldn't convict him of anything. They could only convict three of these guys. And from the documents, it's now apparent that they had not built a single bomb. Most of them did not have passports. They certainly had not booked any tickets. And the jury said, we cannot convict them of even plotting to blow up airplanes by carrying liquids and onto the aircraft and mixing them on board. So they were convicted of conspiring murderous action. And these guys themselves say, well, we just wanted to, you know, make a little bang somewhere in London to get attention for some kind of documentary they were making or something, which is why, you know, they had this high quality jihadist videos. Of course, I can't understand what they're saying, but I'm told that they're jihadist videos. So they, you know, so these guys were making it like a movie or a documentary, and they were clearly twisted, but they were not, according to the jury, not contemplating blowing up airplanes with liquid bombs. So Virgin Atlantic is the first one. I love these guys. The first ones who come out and say, okay, great, that's fantastic. Now that that's all settled, can we please stop the ridiculous fucking bullshit of no more than 100 milliliters of liquid being carried onto the plane? And you know what the response was from the government or from the court? We got to retry these guys. they're going to retry them. I mean, the double jeopardy is already gone here. It's like, oh, okay, you were convicted, you're guilty, but not of that. Well, we got to go back again. I'm sorry. And four of these guys were let go, free, not convicted.
they could probably trump up some new charges. I mean, the great thing about today's legal system is that if you, the double jeopardy thing has always been a craw or a craw. It's a stone in the craw. Well, I can't remember the phrase. It's always gotten these
a thorn in the side.
It's a thorn in the side, there we go, of these prosecutors. And so they, you make the law so complicated that if you can't, okay, you're out on law, you know, sections, this is this, but there's section this, this, and this. We're going to refile with a different, you know, charge. You know, like the one you said they got convicted of planning murderous acts or talking badly about the, I don't know. I
exhaling CO2, you dirty bastards.
So, I mean, there's essentially an limitless number of laws that you can be prosecuted under if somebody's out to get you, and, you know, or to make a point. Now, there must be some other reason to keep these liquids off of planes. I can think of one. I've traveled with people who overpack and bring entire bottles of shampoo that are like this huge bottle of some shampoo you get on sale at Costco that's got a pump at the top, and they pack it with their suitcase and luggage, and they go to, you know, to Europe for 3 days with this big giant bottle of shampoo or whatever it is. I mean, I think anything to encourage people to travel lightly, charge them for extra bags. I'm all for it. Charge them for extra bags. Keep the liquids off the planes. It's mostly to keep people from overpacking.
Oh, okay. All right. I see it a little bit differently.
Well,
just,
you would.
Just a little bit. No, I'm, you know, and it's weird because you think to yourself, well, you know, great. They can actually, you know, so it wasn't a threat. The scientists are on record now in you know, mainstream newspapers saying, look, it's just really not that easy to go mix up something powerful enough on an airplane with multiple elements. And then you think to yourself, well, great. Now, so they can just remove all that, those stupid restrictions. And in the but in the back of your mind, you've got something going like, well, shit, you know, maybe even I've been conditioned at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, well, everybody has. I mean, that's the idea. We're just a bunch of robots. But, you know, the funny thing, the joke of this is you can make a pretty damn good explosive with 3 ounces of, I can name a couple of chemicals that are liquid that would blow the back of the plane off. I mean, it's just, so the whole thing is bull.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course it's all bull. I still love Heathrow Airport where you go through X-ray and then you go through a passport exit where basically some monkeys sitting there just comparing the name on your passport to the name on your ticket, but they look all official and scary and shit.
Well, now they're holding it up too, which cracks me
up.
Let
me hold that up to the light for a second here, and let me just compare. Oh yes. Oh, could you please take off your glasses? Now whatever.
And then they've also got this, at least in the States here, they've got this little, now they've all of a sudden they all have this little blue light of some sort, and then they scan it over your driver's license looking for the code on there. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
And then you're supposed to walk straight into this, into a fishnet-like trap where there's another X-ray machine, but that's only for shoes. And I've made it a sport, and I get away with it every single time. You know, so there's someone there who's supposed to corral these 8 lines of passport exit stands into the shoe X-ray line. Now, right off to the right-hand side is a bureau de change where you can, you know, exchange money. And so either I'll walk straight that way and then pretend that I'm looking at the exchange rates and then just walk through. Or if they're looking at me, I'll fumble around with my bag or, you know, with my passport or whatever. And I'll just wait until they're not looking. And then I just walk right past. It's total horseshit. Total.
I don't know now what is this again? You have a separate thing at the end? Because our shoes are taken off.
I know. No. They decided, this is very British, of course, because
now where this is at Heathrow?
Yes. The taking off, terminal 1 or 2.
Okay.
The taking off of the shoes is, of course, a big pain in the ass because there's really no place, there's no infrastructure in Heathrow, which is shambles anyway. To put your shoes back on. So what they do is you go through the regular X-ray. Interestingly enough, you don't have to take your laptop out of your bag at Heathrow, just to show you the inconsistency. And then they have a separate X-ray where you take off your shoes, put your shoes through the X-ray, and then they have little seats there so you can sit down and put your shoes back on. So they're trying to do it to make it more comfortable for you.
Huh. By the way, that's the guy that we should go find and beat up, which is that shoe bomber.
Really? Well, we should stop Richard, with that shit, too. That's just outrageous.
It's stupid, I know, but the fact is the guy who triggered it, I think we should, when these guys trigger these things, and I would include those liquid bomber guys, I think they should be put in stocks in a public place.
I
think there should be like an area, there should be a, since they're, you know, they're
public
in this kind
shaming.
Of anyway.
Yes.
There should be an area where you can't get right up to him and punch him, but you can throw things at him.
Public shaming, I'm all for it.
Yep.
I've also always said that I'm all for executions being aired on prime time in the United States.
You and me both. But, yep. You know, I think, I mean, I've thought about this, and I think a lot of people have, but everyone, oh, it's too sick.
Yeah. No, right.
Duh. Right. It's totally
that's
sick.
That's the point. If you think it might be some bit of a deterrent, do you think it might work? You know, we show everything else. We show all the trials. We show, you know, well, we don't even show dead military personnel anymore. But, you know, we show all the gore and horror. But when we actually put, you know, some law into effect, we're too pussy to show it on television. In fact, I'd be more than happy to produce that show. It's a great reality show. It's called On Death Row. And at the end, you know how it ends. Each episode ends the same way.
You know, the thing is, that's the interesting thing here, is that the people have, there's a pro and con when it comes to, like, the death penalty, and everybody who's against it says, you know, it's deterrent, it's not a deterrent, it's not a deterrent. And the fact of the matter is, it's not a deterrent because nobody sees it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a theoretical thing, you know, it's like, oh, it's a death penalty, okay, the guy was executed.
Remember
there
how,
were a few protesters out front. And
remember how shocked we all were at the, I was thinking about this just the other day, about the Saddam Hussein hanging video?
Yeah.
But you know what? There's a lot of young kids who are going, shit, man, I ain't going to become Saddam Hussein. That fucking blows. I think, and by the way, I'm against corporal punishment, just so I can
corporal?
Stop. Corporate.
Corporate?
Capital.
Corporate? What kind of punishment are you against?
Capital punishment.
Oh, there we go.
But corporal punishment's okay. I'm totally against taking a life for any reason whatsoever. But since we're doing this stupidity, maybe we'd get a different idea if we actually showed what that entails. When you see people who are flopping around when one injection isn't enough, you know, show that. Go ahead, show it. Show what it really means to kill a human being.
The electric chair would be the one to go with.
Exactly. Show that with their eyes popping out of their
sockets.
But actually,
you know, I think the guillotine might be interesting, too.
Hell in a Handbasket. There you go. That's the name of the show. To Hell in a Handbasket. A new reality show this season on Fox.
It would be hot. People would, although you'd be, I don't know, you know, it'd be interesting to see, just it, as an as a sociological experiment, I wonder what kind of ratings it would get. Would the family sit around and watch it and make the kids watch?
It would be through the roof. Through the roof. And it just amazes me. I got hooked into watching a whole bunch of videos from TMZ.com yesterday. Patricia's recording another show in Holland, so, you know, there's no one to talk to, and my daughter's, oh, yeah, she's 18. She doesn't give a shit about me. And
poor Adam's home alone.
That's right. Just me and my gold. And so I'm sitting here, my Krugerrands. So I'm sitting around, and I'm watching these videos. And have you ever watched this TMZ stuff? It's really amazing, because here are people who are so brash and so mean, and you know, these paparazzi, paparazzi is a big word. It's just, you know, idiots with a video camera, and they'll stick this camera in a celebrity's face and ask all these horrible questions, you know, just egging them on to either, you know, grab the camera or say something that then, of course, will be, you know, headline news. And that's what these guys want, because then they get to sell their video all over the world, or their photos or whatever. And there's so many of these people attacking these celebrities and D-lebrities, but not one of them has the fucking courage to do it to, like, a politician, you know, and really hound a politician and ask him the really tough questions. It's just outrageous to see that we've got the people with the equipment, we've got the people who do the research. Okay, it's research on Lindsay Lohan. But they're doing the research. Why can't we get them to do that about real things that matter, real news?
I think the politicians would, there would be a backlash. I think they'd pass legislation to screw these guys. They'd be out of business. They don't want that.
Well, that legislation would be interesting to see. At least it would be honest.
Well, it's something. So I'm never expecting to see what you're describing, which would be good. I mean, that's the what should be happening. I mean, Reese, of course, you know, the thing going on here is still the never-ending hounding of Sarah Palin.
Yeah, no, I've been following that. It's the same over here. They all the news media just copy and paste whatever's coming over the wire.
And so, but what's weird is you listen to the two sides, like you listen to Rush Limbaugh's interpretation of what's going on, and then you listen to Bill Maher, his interpretation. So you have the extreme, you know, the right wing and the left wing, both, you know, talking about, you know, both, it's almost like the guy's describing the elephant, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable. Everybody sees things totally differently. And the fact is, though, I think they're overdoing the bashing because it's unwarranted, and it's like actually making the Democrats look like
dumb.
Extremely mean-spirited, mean, evil people, and they don't seem to get that. And when it's pointed out to them, they say, "Well, maybe that's the way it has to be. We should go more on the offensive. We should be more like the Karl Rovians, you know, and be attack dogs and go out and be negative." And they're going to do that. I think this campaign is going to go extremely negative, and it's going to be hilarious. I think it's just going to be a laugh riot. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, it is the greatest show on earth, and that's all that it is. These people who are up for election won't actually run anything. They're just actors. The best president we had was an actor. And that's what people miss. You know, this is, it's all about the show, and it's no different than managing Amy Winehouse. You know,
exactly.
It's like, no press. No, we have a press stop. You can't talk to Amy. And then, you know, it's like, then we'll, okay, let's go on, Good Morning America, Charles Gibson. He's in our pocket. We got him. And he'll ask really easy questions, and he'll ask the tough questions in a rehearsed way. It's show business. I keep saying it. Show business, politics is show business for ugly people. And in this case, you know, they're even learning that because Sarah Palin is not ugly.
No, she's. I think she's fine looking. My wife doesn't think much of her. Anyway, so the Sarah Palin thing is continuing. So what we have to do. Somebody wrote in and said, and by the way, somebody mentioned to me that we should mention the lipstick on the pig thing, which is another phony baloney deal going on, where, you know, Obama said it's like lipstick on a pig, which to most of the Republicans was a callback to the convention because Sarah Palin had this joke that involved lipstick.
Yeah,
but meanwhile, you know, so they said, no, it's just an accident. People say lipstick on a pig all the time, and John McCain said it 5 years ago, and here's that, you know, blah blah blah.
It was really clear. It was very clear what Obama
said. Well, here's what made
it
clear that nobody talks about. This is why I thought it was totally clear. He goes from the lipstick on the pig reference, which was just an insult, to talking about fish. And how fish stinks. You put the fish, it's like stinky fish, which is
that.
A female reference that's used by the lower classes.
For an
commonly.
Unclean vagina.
It's extremely insulting. And it was the follow-up to lipstick on a pig.
Really?
There's no doubt in my mind what this was intended to indicate.
Well, when I heard lipstick on a pig, I was shocked. I was literally shocked because I knew immediately, because I had seen that bit where Sarah Palin says, you know, the only difference between a... What'd she say?
Pitbull and
a hockey mom is lipstick. So it was really clear. And I was just like, wow, man, you calling a woman a pig? That's a big deal. And then I thought back to our conversation from last week where you said the Democratic Party in general is ageist and sexist. And I'm like, there it is. Fucking ageist and sexist.
Yeah, totally ageist and sexist. But anyway, the follow-up stuff about the fish, all the fish references, to me, was even more insulting. But nobody wanted to touch that one because, for one thing, it became obvious. And the second thing was it was extremely insulting to even bring it up in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I thought the whole thing was very referential and deferential.
Do you have the exact quote that he used? Was it Obama who said that?
Yeah, Obama. He goes on and on about lipstick on a pig, and then he goes on and on about it's like having dead fish, stinky dead fish in a newspaper. It just stinks. And he went on and on and on about the fish. And it was right after I saw the whole thing. He was in a library someplace discussing this, and you know it was all rehearsed. And he got huge laughs from this audience.
Yeah.
And I mean, as soon as he said lipstick on a pig, they're all snorkeling. It's funny.
Really?
And they had all these kind of nerdy little dweebs And so it was obvious what was going on. And then now, then it went into the denial thing, by the way, which I always get a kick out of this. It's, it reminds me of what used to be a professional wrestling where somebody would come out. They don't do this anymore. And I'm always shocked by this, but you know, the wrestler would go beat the crap out of some guy, and then he'd somehow turn around, and the guy'd beg him. He'd beg, no, 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 don't hurt me. I'm don't hurt me. He'd be on his knees begging, and then as the guy said, okay, I won't hurt you, they boom, he gives him one.
Yeah, you know, right, that right, is right, an old, right, right.
They don't do that anymore. There's none of the begging. There's no more begging. But anyway, Obama goes into this. Oh no, it was just a mistake. Oh, you're kidding. Oh, I didn't mean that. You're the one that's got the dirty mind, which is another trick that comedians use, which is you make a lewd reference and then you act so shocked when everybody notices it.
Exactly. Let's see. Maybe this is the one. I just want to see if I could find that actually that quote. Let's see what this is.
Say a few words about the latest made-up controversy.
Oh, no, that's not it.
No, this is his reaction to it.
Yeah, no.
You have to get the original.
That's what I'm looking for.
Which is predates that.
Yeah.
By the way, when he goes into the made-up controversy, by the way, I'm getting tired of this guy's cadence.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on Letterman.
I saw a couple clips from Letterman. How was he? Was he good?
He was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was outstanding. He's a really smooth guy. But he still got the cadence when he's giving his speeches. He's actually more, he's got a good personality. He's funny. Mm-hmm. He's not a joke maker, but seems to have a sense of humor. But the cadence, this haughty cadence, which is actually sounds a lot like John Kerry, I think is going to wear thin. And, you know, the more they put him on the air, because he just talks like a guy who's, you know, talking down to you.
Here it comes.
But anyway.
Let's just list this for a second. John McCain says he's about change, too. And so I guess his whole angle is, watch out, George Bush, except for economic policy, healthcare policy, tax policy, education policy, foreign policy, and Karl Rove-style politics, we're really going to shake things up in Washington. That's not change. That's just calling some the same thing something different. But, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
Ah, shit. The fish thing isn't on here. I'll look for it later.
Yeah, well, it follows up with the fish stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Which everybody cut that out. But that's what, to me, was the... I mean, that was the confirmation.
Well, was that also an Alaska reference, I guess?
What, the fish?
Yeah. I don't know.
No, the fish is a reference to... I mean, it's a reference to vaginal secretions, to be honest about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's something that you wouldn't. I mean, it's first he gets the big. We got the big laugh with the lipstick on a pig comment in such a way that it was obviously a callback to Sarah Palin,
right?
And her mention of lipstick. And then when he started pounding the fish stuff, then I'm thinking, you know, this is ridiculous. This is going to get slaughtered for this. And indeed, the next day, you know, or actually that day. The right wing guys are all over it, and the left wingers are all snickering. Hey. Oh, no, no, no. You guys are just sick to think that. But then nobody, again, on either side, brought up all this fish malarkey.
I don't know.
I think these guys are going in the wrong direction. In fact, it's already been discussed that, you know, the youth would be the group that puts these guys over. You know, the young voters who never vote because they think everything's a crock of crap for, you know, obvious reasons. And Obama came out as, you know, the non-politician. And so he was going to be, you know, above it all, and he was going to do this above it all. And but meanwhile, this mean-spirited Democratic base, you know, that shows up on the Bill Maher show last night, he had Janine Garofalo on, and she's about as crazy as they come.
She's a massive truther.
Oh, is she a massive truther?
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, big time.
That never came out. But anyway, she just hates the Republicans to an extreme. She said they should all be arrested. I mean, even though she's supposedly just kidding. But anyway, so these guys are like so mean-spirited that they're like making Obama do stuff that's, you know, going in this direction of being snide and you know, not being above the fray, but being just part of it. And it's going to turn off the youth voters who are going to say, I hope he wins. But I got other things to do. I'm not going to vote. And they're going to lose the election because of this kind of thing if they don't get back on their original track, which was winning. They were winning big with the original track, you know, just because they take a few, some people take a few shots at him, like Giuliani at the convention. He had some great, the guy was doing a stand-up routine. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. The guy was great. He could have been a politician.
Well, but you know what it is, John? What happened is it's the whole celebrity thing. You know, Obama was built up, and it just like, a good example is Amy Winehouse. You know, you see this great, great persona, you hear this great voice, you know, the song, everything's fit together because it's an illusion, right? You don't actually know that she's human. And you never, this is the old school Hollywood system, you know, you protect your stars and you micromanage everything and you never ever let the human side come out unless it's completely orchestrated. So this is not Obama's personal, his personal opinion. It's not his words. I mean, all this shit is written for him and made up for him. But that's not how you can't do that in the celebrity culture that we live in today when you use that celebrity culture to actually build the guy up, because that's what happened.
Well, that is what happened. I mean, he was built up as a celebrity, and that's one of the things that they threw back in his face with those early ads, which may or may not have been effective.
I think so.
Well, I don't know if they were effective or not, but I know that they did. They weren't necessarily effective in terms of like changing anybody's mind, but I think they affected with an A the basic perceptions that the Democrats had of themselves. They found it's very offensive because they were, you know, kind of playing a celebrity game, and then they were busted for it. And then the next thing you know, they're like, well, you know, this is a cheap shot. And, you know, then they, you know, they, the, all of a sudden the Paris Hilton video comes out, which was actually the best thing to come
that
out of it.
That was great, yeah.
And the whole thing is being twisted. And I think it's like the Republicans started out, there's no reason the Republicans should win this election. I mean, under any circumstances. I mean, under any normal circumstances, you have a president that can't even show up at his own convention, a vice president that doesn't even have a videotape for their own convention. I mean, he's not even being mentioned.
He was off in Georgia.
Yeah, you have an unpopular situation, but then again, the problem that the Democrats really have is that their crappy Congress that was put in office, you know, just 2 years ago was promising all this stuff. They delivered absolutely nothing, which gave the Republicans the possibility of getting in again, because the Democrats are as do nothing as you can be. But meanwhile, they create this guy Obama from an earlier speech in 2004 when he gave that great speech, the speech. Yeah. And they create this, you know, and they get the thing fine-tuned and fine-honed, and it's like the guy can't lose, and everybody just thinks he's a shoe-in based on the earlier build-up. And then the Republicans just take a needle him a little bit, and the whole thing falls apart.
Yep. Then they totally, with the Sarah Palin pick, they just obliterated Obama's huge appearance, his concert.
Yeah, no, they did a good job of killing the concert with that. And then she became the target for all this out and out hatred, of both women and, you know, her, and the fact that she's only been a governor for 2 years. And it's a small state, you know.
And the press were off because they didn't get to vet her.
Well, you know, if the press was doing its job, because I think it was either on this show or another show, I'm going to have somebody find this reference. I referenced her in May when she first came up in the conversation. She was mentioned as one of the possible choices, and that's when the vetting began with the Republican Party, which was in May, which was a number of months back. But she was never put on any of the lists that the press came out with, even though these weren't official lists by the Republicans. They were just making it up as they go along. And then they got irked by the fact that the whole thing came out apparently. apparently to them came out of left field when it actually didn't.
I just got to write this down. September 13th, John suggests the press might not have been doing their job. Interesting. Interesting little note there. Hey, let's riff on McCain for a second, because that video that came out blew me away.
Which
one? The one that everyone's been talking about. The one of him being released.
The Swedish video. We have it on the blog, Dvorak.org/blog, have a drink.
Right. So here's McCain. And, only when I saw your blog post that I realized that, the story had been that he came out on crutches. And this was him actually leaving, not entering the States, but leaving Vietnam.
Right.
But the thing that I saw that took me immediately was he saluted the guy with a high salute. And these days he can't put his arm up above his shoulder level.
He can't put his arm up, but he can still salute, though, because if you look where the elbow is positioned, you don't necessarily have to have it straight up to get to make a salute work.
Anyway, interesting video just in general, man, about his background.
But not you mentioned that I remember hearing a couple of comments. I mean, you don't need to raise your arm up into the air to salute. You can salute with your actually you could do it with a tuck if you wanted to look like Benny Hill.
It looked high enough for me to actually go compare. And he's much older now, obviously, and it's not really that important because shit, the guy was really in a prison camp. It's like
right. Well, it's obviously when you see him today, you can see that he can't. His arms have limited mobility, and I don't think he's faking that. It could have been a progressive thing that's just deteriorated over time because, there's so much ligament damage or who knows what. But, yeah, he did have a salute. He was limping severely, so I could see the crutches thing actually happening.
Yeah.
But the thing that keeps coming up, because you don't need to lift your arm way up in the air to make a salute. You just need to be able to bend your elbow. But they keep referencing to the fact that poor John McCain can't salute the flag, and I'm not sure that's true.
No. I'm trying it right now. Obviously, you can salute. You can salute without bringing your arm all. I don't know if it's an official salute.
Well, you could do,
But the other pieces of history.
Not obviously a perfect Marine salute with the 90 degrees and all the rest of it.
Right. What was interesting to me is other information that I didn't know about John McCain. So, for instance, his wife, when he came back, he was already married, I guess, when he went off to Vietnam, and he came back, and his wife had been in a really horrible car accident. She had like 13 or 14 operations, and it really messed with her. And, well, he left her, and he left her for Cindy, who subsequently was on... all kinds of drugs, like, Vicodin, Percocet, whatever, for 3 years. And she was completely, completely drugged. She was actually, a foundation that would bring drugs to poor nations. And she was actually getting the drugs from her own foundation.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, she has a certain look of like an ex. I hate to say this because I don't think she's a totally an unattractive woman by any means. And she's thin and she looks rich and she has a lot of style and she's very involved in these foundations. But she has the kind of a look of a woman that may have gone through something like that.
Yeah. Apparently it has left some permanent damage, particularly memory damage. So she can't remember things from like 2 weeks ago. Short-term memory is difficult. And these are by her own admission.
Hmm.
So while they're digging up all this shit on Sarah Palin, there's a lot more shit. There's plenty for the Obama camp to do, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they're going to go after it, but they have to, I know they have to have meetings because stuff like that is pretty hypersensitive, especially it's like, can we go after, here's a, you got to, the guy's got he's immediately got protection or insurance based on this being 5 years in a prisoner of war camp. And then, do you go after some woman who had a drug problem, even though she's, if you looked at her bio that they ran at the convention, it's like, oh my God, how does this woman have any time?
Yeah.
She made Sarah Palin look like she was a lazy fatso sitting around eating bonbons in terms of the amount of stuff that she had going on. I mean, she was just like, she's got this going on and that going on. They, have 20 kids and they adopted a African child. And it went, just the whole family is enormous. So he has a football team when he brought them out. And, So what are you going to do? I mean, how do you attack that without looking like an idiot?
The nutty thing is, John, is I hope our listeners realize how much of a banana republic the United States is when just that this is the actual conversation. This is what it's about, you know, while, you know, about stinky fish and lipstick on pigs and lack of experience and all this stuff. While, you know, we're basically about, you know, we're in a cold war with Russia. You know, we've got a stagflation and on the brink of disaster financially. And this is the shit we're talking about it. What's wrong with us?
Well, you know, what's wrong with us? We should be talking about Lehman Brothers. Yeah. So,
I can talk about Lehman Brothers. I can tell you about, we walked, you know, Ron and I, we, our first company, Think No Ideas. So we had an option to take that public, and Lehman Brothers courted us for, months. I think it was 4 or 5 months. And, you know, that's a really difficult process. And it really drains on any company to, you know, just to get that going. It was just, it went around in circles. And then, I can just remember the meeting. We said, hey, you know what? Screw you guys. We're leaving. And we literally walked out and they came running down the street after us. And, but we wound up going with some like brown shoe firm with a huge $12 million raise. It was a little bit before the dot-com boom. Lehman Brothers, yeah. It's an interesting to work with a company like that on something of that magnitude, even though for them it was really small, because it's essentially, you know, the only thing they're doing from the minute you walk in the door is they're looking for reasons not to do it because it could, you know, screw up their career. There's no other, they don't give a shit about if you're going to be successful or not. They just want to guide the IPO.
Did you think they were sleazeballs?
No. And they were nice. You know, they had every meeting, they had the bagels and the fruit. You know, that was nice.
Mm. Well, they're toast now.
They certainly are. 150. This is one of the big ones, though. These are like one of the, these are serious players, these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a disaster. I mean, the Bear Stearns thing was like, you know, spit in the bucket. I mean, they got out smelling like a rose somehow. By doing it early. If you're going to fail early.
Fail,
in the game.
Be first to fail.
Because after a while, they start saying, hey, wait a minute. We've seen too much of this. You guys can just, you know, sink to the bottom for all we care. Because people, you know, the government and everybody else gets sick of it. And, you know, you want to go out early, not late.
Well, and I come back to
it's
my
like
original.
Losing the last game in a football season.
I come back to my original statement, which is, you know, knowing how Wall Street operates, and many banks were my clients in our previous company. If there's a penny to be made, if there's a basis point to be made, they'll go after it unless they don't know that they can go after it. And I think that's the problem, is because, you know, what there's, you know, did you hear, well, this was also interesting, that because, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have gone into conservatorship, that actually, according to the contracts, and I'm talking about trillions of dollars in derivatives contracts, is a credit event, and all of those deals have to be unwound. And Lehman Brothers is an essential part of that. You know, credit default swaps are a derivative. So I think that it's so big that no one understands how to unwind all of these deals that are poorly documented.
Right. No, these derivatives of, you know, there's derivatives that go both ways on all these deals. As Lehman Brothers fails, there's other things making, you know, going up in value. And then there's insurance derivatives
that's
these companies. And if you...
Sorry, go ahead.
There was like some, they had this on the other day, and there was some guy who's made millions and millions off of these companies, off of the Bear Stearns failure, because he had a derivative of an insurance that was covering this, that if this happened, you know, it would go up, and if you shorted it, it would go up. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
I was going to say that's been fixed now, because everyone's onto that. And with Lehman Brothers, with Lehman Brothers, right now it costs, to insure $10 million, it's like 786 basis points. So it's almost $1 million now to insure $10 million if it's through Lehman, whereas it was like 70,000 or some, like some fraction of what it was
just
a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, it went up a little bit. Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Your this connection this week is not very good. I think your daughter's downloading something.
No, she's not here. I'm me and my gold.
Huh.
Someone posted something interesting on my drop. If you go to Google Maps, Ossetia has been wiped off. No longer is the, no, seriously, no longer is the, like, the border showing what part of Georgia is Ossetia or Setia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been taken off of Google Maps.
Has it been made part of Georgia or Russia?
No, part of Georgia.
Huh. Yeah, there's a little politics going on there.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the whole Russian thing is the one, it is the story that we're, I mean, I don't, even if we try to piece it together, what's really going on, I think is going to, you know, something, the whole thing is flaky.
Well, something's got to give somewhere, John. I mean, it's like, you know, billions, tens of billions of dollars has flowed out from Russia and from the stock market. And now a lot of these oil companies and gas companies are in trouble because they can't access capital either. There's just a shortage of actual money, and the only solution is to print it. And,
right. Which,
and, yeah, no one wants to do that.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to force. Here's another theory, if you're going to go, that the whole thing is set up by the international banking community or whoever.
Which it is.
Well, I'm not a complete subscriber to that. But let's just say that they're trying to fix the problem that we have in the United States, which is this unbelievable, you know, debt that we're suffering under. If you look at the most, you know, the countries in the world, there's a CIA document on this showing all the levels of debt that the various countries have. We're not even close to our
number
numbers.
One with a bullet, baby.
So we're like way out in front. But the way you pay off debts, of course, is with cheap money, and so you want to go into a hyperinflation economy. And then you can basically pay off all your debts really cheap because, you know, in hyperinflation, everything all of a sudden starts going up in value and which includes, you know, your pay and everything else. And then so now say you're working on the basis of making $50,000 a year and you had a $50,000 debt. The debt stays at $50,000. But now because of hyperinflation, you're making $500,000 a year.
Yeah, right.
So you can pay that $50,000 debt off like there's nothing. It's just 10% of your salary when it was once 100% of your salary. And, you know, then, of course, the next year is you're making $1 million a year and then $2 million. I mean, this happened in Brazil.
Oh, that's
and I have some of the Brazilian notes. I have a 500,000 Cruzeiro note, which was worth like, would have been worth like the equivalent of $500,000. And when I got hold of it, it was worth it like a buck.
Well, so hold on a second. So I'm totally with you on this because that is fascinating. So how do they control that? Under the presumption that, it is the bankers who are the true owners of the universe and not Lehman Brothers, but guys above that. How do they control that from happening? Do they just go threaten the unions and make sure that wages stay low? I mean, how do you counteract a hyperinflation?
Well, when you start
in that
to go
manner?
Into an inflationary mode, you have to raise the interest rates.
Right.
And I mean, you can only raise them so much before the economy essentially stops dead. It's
right.
Almost like, you know, stalling a plane, right?
Right. At this point you can't raise it because then no one will be. Then the housing market will never recover.
Right. So you're between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. They set it up almost as though. Once the hyperinflation thing takes off, it's like what happened in Germany in the 30s. Once the thing, which could happen in our country in our next decade, which would be the downturn decade based on my cyclical stuff, once the spigots open on hyperinflation, it's very difficult to control it. It just goes completely crazy. And I mean, it might take 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 years before you can get it under control. But meanwhile, during that era, you can pay off all these old debts. Right. And in a hyperinflation environment, what you want to be invested in is real property. Because if you have like a house, it's not going to go down in value in a hyperinflation environment. It's going to go up and it's going to skyrocket, as a matter of fact. So your, you know, $500,000 home is going to be worth maybe $50 million for all you know. Then they have to, you know, but essentially that would fix the problem, but it would cause an interesting, nobody knows exactly what the end result would be. I mean, because Germany went through it and they don't have any, you know, long-term problems that I can see in their economy. Brazil's gone through it. I think Argentina went through it. It's been done.
Well, I think the main difference in this cycle of expansion contraction, which of course is how these true owners of the earth actually make their money by taking our real possessions when they contract everything, is that now that, you know, there is nothing left. No one has any savings. There's no 401k. There's no home. We don't own our cars. There's nothing left. There's nothing left to create the next bubble with. You know, that's the way I see it, is that you got bubble following on bubble, and it's a 10-year, you know, whatever that cycle is. And this was the part of the housing bubble, and then we got the financial bubble, and now it's over. There's nothing left to take. No savings. Well, no money. There's just nothing.
Well, there's actually, I'm not convinced that your view of the scorched earth is accurate. I mean, I have properties, and
okay, way, John, you and I are in the top one percentile of the universe.
I'm looking around my neighborhood. There's houses everywhere.
John, I mean, you live in an affluent neighborhood. What are you talking about?
I live in a middle class area of the Northern California. It's nothing particularly ritzy about it.
You know what I'm saying.
No, I know. But I think you're wrong. I think the home ownership is extremely high in this country. And yeah, there's a lot of people that were shaken out of their home ownerships.
And you think
but
it's over?
But in fact, if you look at the total numbers, it's not that many compared to how many people actually own homes. And these homes would be extremely valuable in a hyperinflation environment.
Yeah, sure they will be. But the people will never get to it. And they're walking away from it. They've been paying off their mortgage with their credit cards. It was unaffordable. It was a gravy train. Everyone was on it.
That is a small number of people.
Dude, I so disagree. Everyone was on the property ladder. Hey, you know, just refi. I mean, look, turn on the television. They're still trying to do it.
No, everybody refied, but they didn't necessarily put themselves into a hole doing it.
Yes, a lot of people did who just weren't smart.
A lot of people it's not the majority of homeowners, that's for sure.
How do you know?
The numbers, they don't make any sense.
Where
I mean, it's got to be, if it was 10%
from?
Of the total home, we can do some research. And in fact, I'll bet you there's somebody out there that has the exact numbers. If it was 10% of the total homeowners, I'd be surprised if the number was that big. It's just being exaggerated.
Well, then the financial meltdown has very little to do with the housing bubble then.
No, I think it has. I think it's connected, but I think there's other things wrong with the financials. I mean, these guys were doing crazy deals every which way. I mean, they were speculating on the oil. I mean, was it Lehman Brothers or Morgan Stanley? One of the two that has the biggest. They're set in heating oil. I think for this winter, they're the biggest holders of all the contracts.
Yeah, 80%.
I mean, they're
whatever.
In everything. These guys have gone crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Well. One thing's for sure, it's overpriced, but interesting to see if you all of a sudden, instead of making 50 grand, you're making $500,000 and then you can pay off. And that, I guess that'll only hurt the financial institutions.
The banks.
Yeah. Unless they have some small fine print.
Well,
there.
You know, the banks can be, the banks aren't going to be hurt because they're going to all be out of business. The banks can deal with this because if you really think who's going to get hurt, it's not going to be our banks. It's going to be China. China's the one that holds most of our debt.
They hold all the debt,
You know, they won't do anything about changing the value of their money. They won't do this. They won't do that. They own all the debt. They threaten us every once in a while. They've done this a couple of times. Oh, you know, we can start dumping your debt on the market. It's going to be, your dollar's going to be worthless.
Yeah, they won't do that because they export everything.
No, they can't. They'll screw
us.
Themselves.
So they
won't do that. But the fact that they threaten it, it means it's a possibility. So, you know, say, okay, well, let's just go into hyperinflation, take the whole thing into the stratosphere, and we'll pay you guys off, get our money back, and, you know, screw you. Here, have a dollar. You know, here, have $700 trillion. You know, which is worth nothing.
Right. But can we actually keep the people in line with the hyperinflation? Because that's got to lag behind.
No, it always lags behind. But the Brazilians did it the best. And if you go to Brazil and talk about this era, and I was there during part of that era where you couldn't cash your dollars in. You had to cash in like within 10 minutes of your purchase because it was just like
because it was changing so radically.
It was eating away.
It's
bankers
like leaving a parking garage. You have to go 100 miles an hour. Otherwise, your parking ticket costs twice as much by the time you get out.
So the banks there are the ones who saved the day for the general public. What you did is when you got your pay for that week, which would increase on a weekly basis because of the values, you go right into the bank, and the bank would have all the mechanisms in place to ratchet whatever was they were holding. right. with the inflation.
Right.
So in other words, the interest rates were quite high. And so they you'd get your money in there real quick, and then it would ratchet while it was in there. But it didn't, you know, it discouraged actually having cash.
So which countries did that? I want to look this up.
Well, Brazil? Had one of the more interesting periods, and I think that was in, I don't know, in the 70s and 80s, I think, something like that. And then Argentina had a bout of this, and I think many of the South American countries had a bout. You can go to Zimbabwe.
I actually had Zimbabwe written down on my list of things to talk about with you today, because I wanted to understand, maybe you have an idea, how does this work? Now they've got... Tsvangirai, who was elected as the new leader of the country, but they still leave Mugabe in there, and he's still the president or something. How does that work?
they can't get rid of the guy.
Yeah, that's crazy. What kind of power does he have? He must have the power of the people behind him. This is what you know. Everyone calls him.
No, he's
a murderer.
Got the power of the secret police. He's essentially the Shah of Iran.
Yeah, but what do you... Oh, come on. The CIA can go in there and kick his ass anytime they want.
Do you think they want to?
Well, Zimbabwe or Rhodesia has never... No one's ever been able to control it. But yeah, I think they do. Of course they want to. It's just been extremely difficult.
Why do they care? It's a comedy act. And everyone's getting a kick out of it.
Come on. Zimbabwe has something.
I think it's already been pulled out, whatever it is. Yeah. But I'll tell you this, there's an example of modern hyperinflation. And I, by the way, somebody sent me a note, I'm going to thank him later. I'm trying to get some Mugabe dollars, which are the are the hyper, you know, now you buy stuff with a brick, you know, they have, you just, the money's so worthless that they brick it up and put a rubber band around it, and then, you know, you trade in the weight of the worthless money. But there's these bills that have Mugabe's picture on them, and I'm trying to get some Mugabe money.
You've only mentioned this five times, you know.
I'm mentioning it the last time. I'm not going to mention it again. I mean, I'm going to have to go through other channels, obviously, to get this money.
We have more listeners now, so it may just happen. You watch. You'll start getting your
Mugabe. Well, some guy said he's got a million dollar Zimbabwe note, but it doesn't have Mugabe's picture on it, but he's going to send it to me anyway. And so at least I have $1 million note. And
$1 million.
It's worth like 2 cents or a penny. Yeah. And but to a collector, it might be worth a dollar, so you know. Whatever the case, that's an example of, you know, of a situation where you have hyperinflation run amok. So and I could say, you know, what do you do when this is one of the reasons I believe that most of our debt is kept in dollars, and that every time somebody wants to switch to the euro, we get upset about it. I always thought it would be fine if people switched to the euros, and then we could reverse the trend of the value of the dollar, and then we could kind of screw over anyone who went to the euro.
Well, the euro has to come down now. Yeah, that's what the European Central Bank is realizing, is it's got to come down in value.
It's too high.
Yeah.
I was looking at, and of course, every time you mention this, there's always somebody writes, you don't understand the international mechanisms. Because I always like to mention wine prices, and I came up with another one yesterday. So I'm looking at this wine. It's a very small Medoc wine. I thought it was pretty tasty. I had it. It was like $13.95, inexpensive Bordeaux that was being sold locally. And so I decided to look up the Chateau, which I never heard of before. And I look it up, and there they had it for sale in England at one of the better places that has good prices, and it was £10.90. So the wine in England was $22, and the wine here was $14. And I'm thinking, and the wine is coming from France, which is you could throw the bottles from Bordeaux and hit London. So it wasn't like a big shipping problem. And to get the wine to California, you got to ship it across the Atlantic Ocean. You know, either put it on a train across the country, or you got to run it around the Panama Canal. I mean, this is a long way. It must be $5 in shipping to get this bottle of wine over here. Yet it's still cheaper by a good $6, $7, $8. What's wrong with this picture?
Well, they have to manipulate the markets better.
Well, you know, you see this obvious, discrepancies about why is somebody in England paying $22 for, and this is, and this thing is obviously sold as a new wine, so it's been sold in euros, which is, skewed toward away from the U.S. Why am I getting this stuff so much cheaper here? It doesn't make any sense unless the whole system is like cockeyed. And that's why, I mean, it's like this, what I talked about the other week, where these, you know, you go to San Francisco, the place is crawling with Germans and French and Italians and a lot of British, and they're buying up the place because it's like they get all this stuff dirt cheap. But you look at what they're buying, and half the stuff's imported from Europe. I mean, it's like, why are you buying the stuff here when you know, it's like when I go to Tokyo. And you go to the Ginza and you go to those stores and you look in there, they have all this European stuff in there. It's so expensive that you go, my God, why would I even be buying this stuff? You know, here it's ridiculous. Then you realize it's because it's coming all the way from Europe, you know, and it's showing up in a Japanese store. Yeah, it's not going to be cheaper, but it is here.
Let me switch gears on you for a second. Big news about Sotheby's, the auction house. For the first time ever, a living artist, Damien Hirst. Have you heard of this guy?
No.
This is the guy who does he does animals and formaldehyde and really weird art.
Okay.
So he's set up for an auction on, I think it's Monday, which is estimated to sell 65 million pounds worth. This is this may be the guy who actually did. I wonder if he did the fat council collector or whatever it was that we talked about eons ago. But anyway, he's going directly through the auction house. I don't know much about auctions, but I do know that when people are worried about something, he's not going through an agent. And now, and you know, this is, and of course, this stuff is all subjective anyway. And it's, and, you know, what is art worth other than the materials that it was put together with? Or as Andy Warhol would say, what you can get away with. And so there's, people are thinking this is going to flop, which would just kill the, kill a lot of, how the art world is thinking now that, you know, they've, all the grand masters have all been bought up and no one's selling anymore and they're all hidden away or been stolen or whatever. And now people are going after living artists. And so it's interesting. It's something that's never happened in their history before.
You know, if living artist stuff isn't dirt cheap.
No, this
especially
guy,
when the guys, this no, guy's, I'm just saying, I'm saying if living artists stuff isn't dirt cheap, it's not going to move. I mean, the only appeal of living artists, generally speaking, is to have a nice decorative piece of possibly good art, inexpensively, relatively speaking.
Well, I don't know.
So now, who's going to be paying, you know, this kind of money unless you're projecting into the future that's going to be worth more? Because it's obviously when you get into the millions of dollars, it's investment grade art, and I'm not seeing it. But well, I have to look into this.
I read this differently. What I read is that you bypass the dealer. The dealer is, of course, the key guy because he's the one that inflates the value in the market and is out there doing the PR and the bullshit. And
right.
So now the artist is going direct. I don't know if 65 million pounds is dirt cheap.
See that it is dirt. It's not inexpensive, but let's put it this way. If anyone who got there, and I think anyone who out there collects art from living artists, you 90% of the time, if you find an artist you like, you go bypass the dealer anyway. This is one of the reasons the dealers have to mark stuff up because they know this goes on and the artists say, oh, you know, I've got an exclusive with such and such a gallery. That's bull. You can find an artist, you know, that you really like. You just track them down. You go to their studio. You fall all over yourself. And the next thing you know, you're getting the stuff at the artist price to the dealer or less. I mean, right. I've had people give me stuff. And so that's bull. It sounds like the whole thing is a publicity stunt. We don't have to go through the dealer and go straight to the auction house. If you really want this guy's stuff, just go visit the guy. He's not like hiding.
Speaking of bull, the sales centerpiece is the Golden Calf, a sculpture of a bullock in formaldehyde with hooves and horns cast in 18 karat solid gold, expected to sell before between 8 and 12 million pounds. It's a bargain.
They're giving it away.
Buy two.
Anyway, I'm just saying the whole thing sounds like a scam.
And some tech news that you might be interested in. The government commission.
Wait! Before you go into the tech news, I'm going to just add one more little thing to art. I think, by the way, that most art, you know, the whole art scene is something of a scam anyway.
Well, of course it is.
But I like rugs. You know, I like Turkish and Persian carpets. By the way, are dirt cheap now. I didn't get them rather than expensive.
Well, stocks before Iran is bombed to shit.
I've always been fascinated. I've always been fascinated by like these carpets because they're all handmade, and I like the different kinds. And I like the flat weaves too. But so I know enough, and I read books, and I try to figure out, because it's much worse than wine. I mean, it's this like extremely complicated business. So I finally found some expert, and he only had one word of advice. I found this guy. He knows everything in the world about rugs, and the Turkish rugs, and the Afghan rugs, and the war rugs, and all the rest of them. And I said, so he gave me this sage piece of advice. He says, whatever you paid for a rug, you paid too much.
That's like the advice I got when I looked at buying my own plane. And the advice was, if it floats, flies, or fornicates, you should rent it. So the UK commissioned the government commissioned a report about the internet because, you know, of course, just like America, you know, so we have to be leading. We have to be the leaders. We need more bandwidth. And so what they're contemplating now, and I didn't know that this was an issue, but now that I think about it, it's obviously a beautification issue. They're now talking about allowing fiber to run above ground in order to make it cheaper and to roll it out faster.
That's not new.
It is here.
Well, I know, because we have fiber coming to our place in Port Angeles, above ground.
You have to understand, in America, telephone wires and all this stuff and electricity is above ground. In many countries in the world, John, it's below ground. And that's dumb because people think it's ugly.
It is. Well, you know, I think it's charming, to be honest about it.
I hate it because, you know, it really reduces the amount of places I can land my plane in an emergency.
Well, that I can understand, but I'm looking at the, there's some neighborhoods around here that have, we do that too. We go underground. It always ends up getting flooded by the rain and it shorts out. It's a disaster. But anyway, but some of the neighborhoods that had the telephone poles and they were like loaded with all kinds of, you know, cable TV and people just wire anything on there. and then they took the poles down and put it all underground and it looks kind of sterile. It doesn't have any life to it. I mean, it's just like, you know, it just looks kind of, it's creepy to me. I was raised in an environment filled with telephone poles, I have to say. But it's something creepy about the poleless areas. There's no, you don't feel the connection between people. I mean, you can visibly see the connections. I mean, you see this guy's hooked to the pole, you know, and I'm hooked to the pole and I got a cable TV thing coming in and, you know, and it's easier for them to make changes. You want to bring an extra line in, you know, they just throw it up on the pole.
They just throw it over the pole. Yeah, that's true. I've never thought of it that way, as you can see the connections between people. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, and I've always found it to be somewhat comforting. And it's kind of cool to find, you go into the old part of the, you know, some old little town in the middle of nowhere, and they have all these old metal poles and these old glass insulators, and it's still, you know, sparking
but
it's still working, you know, and you go, wow, it's just something about it. I don't know. I think it's charming. And the fact that people like want to rip these poles down, I can see it in areas where you can't afford the wood because these poles are, you know, typically, you know, pretty tall trees, but I don't know. Doesn't bother me, let's put it that way.
Right. Well, anyway, it's a big deal over here because people don't like their wires running around above ground. It's not done.
Yeah, well, in a city, of course, I mean, you don't want it because it doesn't make any sense. And you got a big skyscraper and a telephone pole out front.
Yeah, but the cities are never the problem. I mean, London's got 20 megabytes, you know, per second up and down. I mean, they've got the shit. I'm still doing 1 megabit down, 300 kilobytes up from where I am, fast as I can get.
Yeah, that's pretty lame.
And boy, it shows when we do these shows, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a pretty lame connection for today.
It's extremely lame. And it's just because I'm too far away from the exchange. Yeah, you know, they just
I mean, I think
it
would be a
anymore.
Good connection as a backup.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, actually, I have one of those Vodafone dongles that you plug into your laptop. And although there is a limit, so I can't use it all the time, whenever I upload a show, I always plug that in because it uploads at almost a megabit per second. I have so the wireless connection is better than the wired connection.
Yeah, that's there's no reason for that.
That's wrong.
I don't think, you know, wireless is great, but wired is best.
I'm down with that.
So what else? Anything?
I don't know. You got your notes?
I didn't get any. The only note I had was to do the Sarah Palin lipstick thing because somebody was interested on Twitter. They mentioned, you got to talk about it. What's your opinion? And I also had a theory. Oh, yeah, I did have one thing I was going to do, which was I was going to send you this video, but it was a picture. It was Clinton talking to Obama. He was going to have lunch with him, and then he was doing this thing. He came out and says that Obama's going to win handily.
Big. He's going to win big, is what he said.
Well, he said the word was handily, actually.
Oh, I thought he said big. Okay.
Anyway, so they showed this video. It's on the blog, and Clinton is standing there with his mouth open. He looks like he's gassed, and
He doesn't look well.
No, he doesn't look well. He looks like he's drunk, actually, and he sounds kind of slurry. And I'm thinking, now this is like out there, and I'm thinking, should I even bring this up? Because it's obvious that Clinton, Bill Clinton, wants Obama to win. He'll do anything for him to win for obvious reasons. He doesn't want his wife running in 2012 because it's a big hassle, and if she gets to be president, his life is ruined, right?
Okay, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that makes sense.
His life is ruined. Meanwhile, she wants him to lose because she knows she has a shot in 2012 if he does. You know, I mean, the Senate's are going to be her last shot, and she'd love to be president. Otherwise, she wouldn't have put all this work into it. So she wants him to lose, and he wants him to win. I'm wondering if she's either poisoning him.
Yeah, she's going to kill him. There you go. Thank you, John. I love that theory. Next on the Clinton hit list is Bill.
I mean, it just seems to me that he doesn't look himself, and he's kind of dingy, and she, I'm sure, is not happy with this, him going and meeting with Obama, and then now going to Florida to promote him and all the rest of it. And, you know, I don't know if she has access to his food, but then again, it could be, you know, anybody who would want to get him out of the picture, but then again, it could also be the Obama people, because if Clinton, for some reason, and I'm not wishing this on the guy, because he's, you know, not even old enough to be elderly, if something happened to him and he died, let's say from natural causes,
heart attack,
or from the bad operation, or who knows what drugs that he had to take. I mean, there's a million positives. It would create a huge sympathy vote for Obama.
Oh man.
So I mean, so you're Obama's camp could be killing him for all we know.
Wait a minute.
I mean, it's just like there's too many parties. It would be a great mystery, by the way, to write, because there's all these different parties that would like to get rid of him for all kinds of different reasons. And then again, if it would cause a sympathy vote for Obama, then would Hillary really want him gone? Or then forget that. Let's don't kill Bill. Let's just make him kind of dingy and like a goofball, you know, because he's, you know, who knows. So he's just standing around making stupid comments.
Yeah, he can get through any kind of embarrassment. Let me analyze what you're saying, because that's very interesting. First of all, I think the idea that he would hate to be the first man is spot on, because that effectively takes away his main source of income, which is just millions and millions and millions of dollars on the speaking circuit. So I guess you can't do that when you're married to the president. So that would probably suck, because, and you and I know this, the guy's notorious cokehead. This is probably what caused his heart trouble in the first place. He may still be snorting coke. Do you think he looked high?
He didn't look coked up, let's put it that way. I don't think so. But he just seemed like he was like, didn't get enough sleep, or
when he turned towards Obama and it was on profile, he's a shadow of himself. He's really, really thin. He's like almost a Steve Jobs like transformation, you know, and Steve Jobs was seriously ill. Clinton has a serious heart issue, but, he's not gained back any of his posture. He's a big guy.
Yeah, yeah, and he used to work out a lot.
Wilting away. So anyway, it wouldn't be hard if he's still a cokehead. It wouldn't be hard to keep him addicted.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not buying that. I mean, at his age with a bad heart, I can't imagine him not having enough willpower to just say no to that. And I always wonder about people that are using drugs in their older years. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But the something's up is all I know. It just seems he seemed dingy. He looked like he was like in some other planet. And then he makes these crazy assertions, which, you know, he's thought Hillary was going to win too, as somebody pointed out. But I just think that this guy's in, like, in, you know, he's part, whatever we're going to see in the next 8 weeks or 7 weeks is going to be, he's going to be part of the action. It's going to be, again, like I said, when we started the show, this is going to be a hilarious little period to watch, and it'll give us something to talk about. And I'll tell you, my blog numbers are way up because we do a lot of political blog, yeah, posts. Mostly my bloggers are all a bunch of Democrats generally. And we want to thank Bubba, by the way, for putting the notes
up. Yeah. Right on to Bubba. Hey, so I looked this up. So he said Obama will win handily.
Yeah.
Handily. Adverb.
Yeah, he said handily.
Skillfully, dexterously, expertly, conveniently, or easily. Easily is actually the third meaning, according to
Yeah, I think he meant easily. And then last night on the Bill Maher show, you had your typical two. You had two Democrats, Salman Rushdie, who I didn't realize was almost a socialist, and Janine Garofalo, who's like, you know, this, you know, woman.
By the way, I love Janine Garofalo. So lay off. She's awesome. Have you seen those? Could you see her tattoos on her arms?
Yeah, she's got tattoos.
Massive tattoos. Now she's hot, man. There's something really hot about her. I like her.
I've never thought her as hot in any way, but that's okay if you feel that
way.
Yeah,
but I love all women because they're all sun princesses, okay?
Can I finish?
Yes.
So the two of them, these two are sitting next to each other, and they both agree. And by the way, there's a guy from Wall Street Journal, John Ford, I think is his name, who actually stood up to everybody very nice to them to send him an email. But anyway, these two both agreed to each other that it's going to be a landslide for Obama.
Really?
No matter what anybody thinks. And they're not the only ones who feel this way. And that's where I think the Clinton thing came from.
Interesting.
And what's interesting to me is that if you go to the other side of the fence, and I'm like, try to listen to both sides for the purposes of this show, for no other reason. If you listen to Rush Limbaugh, who's become a very good deconstructionist, he believes it'll be a landslide for, you know, he doesn't say it'll be a landslide for McCain, but he says he wouldn't be surprised. And I'm kind of more in agreement with him.
Well, there's one little catch, which is, although it was, I think it was poorly executed, Ron Paul's endorsement of, what did he endorse? What exactly happened there?
At first, I don't know. I never got to see the end of it. I know that they were going to do some sort of a deal. I thought they were going to run the guy. Was he going to say this, the guy Webb, not Webb, but the libertarian candidate. Did he endorse him?
I'm looking it up because, I was really pissed because all of a sudden I started getting all of the emails from people saying, hey man, hey, you know, Ron Paul, man, run, you know, big announcement. And they had some heat going. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone was blogging about it. And
yeah, we blogged it.
Yeah. And then it's like, it just kind of dies and, you know, there's no coverage, no nothing. And I'm looking now on campaignforliberty.com. I think that he endorsed the, was it either the Libertarian?
Oh, it would have to be the Libertarian. Who else would be? Who would it be?
The Constitution Party?
Oh, I guess there's another one. Yeah, there's actually about three fringe groups that are running.
This is the thing that our foreign listeners probably don't realize, is that America is not just a two... I mean, effectively, it is, of course, a two-party system, but it's not. You know, anyone can stand up and run for president. And, you know, you don't even have to be a member of a party. And right, there are plenty of people that put themselves on the ticket. The problem is, of course, they don't get invited to the debates. And so if you're not on television and you don't have the budget for television, then you don't become president, nor do you become Madge selling Palmolive. That's just the way it works.
You know, yeah,
they don't even have it on their website. What the hell is
Bob Barr is the guy that's running.
Bob Barr, right.
And Chuck Baldwin.
That's the Libertarian Party,
the other
guy.
No, Baldwin is the Constitution Party, and Barr's the Libertarian.
So I think Ron Paul endorsed both of them. Is that the story?
I don't know. I never got the follow-up to this story. I just blogged the first part of it, which was on the 9th, and then I never heard anything else and never bothered checking. You know, I thought it would show up on the radar. Never did.
That's frustrating.
Well, did you do a Google on Ron Barr and or Bob Barr and Ron Paul?
Yeah, so I have A Divider, Not a Uniter. The American Chronicle is the top hit. Give me a break. This thing wasn't covered.
Oh, I see. On the 10th, Barr asked Ron Paul to be his running mate.
Right, but didn't he decline?
Well, he said in advance a long time ago that he wasn't going to do anything that would... he wasn't going to do anything if he couldn't get the nomination as a Republican. I mean, he made a point of that.
Oh, what's this now? I'm seeing Bob Barr pulled out of a press conference Paul's Campaign for Liberty held at the National Press Club in D.C., which included independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader, Green Party candidate Cynthia McKinney, oh, that's right, and Constitution Party candidate Chuck Baldwin. So I guess what Ron Paul was doing was saying, hey, here's some alternatives that you can also vote for. Cynthia McKinney, by the way, very interesting story. You know about her?
No.
Oh, my gosh. There's a whole documentary movie about her. I'll send you a link. I can't remember what the name of it is right now. But she is she's quite a history of changing politics in the United States. She's a black senator, black female senator. Oh,
I've seen her. Yeah, not you mention it.
Just to hand all of
very
it out
sharp.
There. Whoa, extremely. And Ralph Nader, I heard him on the Alex Jones show the other day. He's now become a truther. How about them apples?
Well, the truther thing has got, you know, the problem is that here's the problem that I don't know what, I mean, I'm almost thinking now that the government is encouraging this, the truthers, because they refuse to release the videotape from the gas station showing the plane crashing into the Pentagon. Yeah. Why?
Because
why?
Because it wasn't a plane. Because it wasn't a plane. John,
it was
John,
a missile. Yeah,
John, listen.
Whatever.
No, listen. Just listen to me for one second.
I know all this crap.
No, you don't know. You don't know about the flight data recorder. You don't know about that.
All right, tell me about it.
Okay, the flight data recorder. This is from pilotsfor911truth.org, and I'm a member of that because that's the one thing I actually know something about is about flying, and so the NTSB finally released the black box data. And first of all, it shows a trajectory this 757 made, which is any professional pilot, and many of them have said impossible to do. You can't pull that maneuver off with that type of aircraft, which is a 330-degree turn. But also the altimeter settings, because you know we know the atmospheric conditions for each day. That's history, right? It's written down. And the way the altimeter was set and the data that the doctor data, the NTSB sent, shows that the plane actually overflew the Pentagon by about 480 feet as it dropped the motherfucking missile and flew off, which eyewitnesses have also said they saw happen. So there was no plane. That's why they don't release that footage, because it was, and by the way, it happened to be on a side of the Pentagon that was under construction, that had just been fortified. It was the exact opposite side of the building is where any of the heavyweights sat. And by the way, if you're going to crash a plane and kill someone in the Pentagon, hit the freaking roof. Why try and skim along the ground, which is virtually impossible to do, skim along the ground for hundreds of feet to hit right into the side? I mean, no, this was a missile that was sent by, that was shot off by a plane that overflew and left. It's a standard maneuver. And that's from the data. This data, by the way, the black box rebooted itself 20 times in this 45-minute flight. That's at least that's the data that NTSB sent back to the pilots for 911truth.org. That does not, either that doesn't happen, or the plane would never take off. These black boxes are checked before they leave. There's regular routine checks. Rebooting 20 times in a short flight? No, it wasn't rebooted. It was doctored data, doctored poorly. Experts have corroborated this. And that's why they're not going to release the footage. Never mind the fact that there's not a single shred of passenger or luggage. I love Flight 93, by the way. That's my favorite. The plane that bored itself into the ground in Pennsylvania. And they found nothing except a passport and a bandana belonging to the 5-foot hijacker who hijacked this airplane with a box cutter. Nothing is found. Nothing but the bandana and the passport. Just
okay,
like Muhammad
so
Atta's
you're
passport.
You're a truther, right?
I've always been a truther. I've never hid that. I've always been a truther.
So here's the thing, some of the other aspects that are kind of interesting. I mean, besides that, the plane crash in Pennsylvania. There's a... If the guy, if say a fighter plane did a low pass over the Pentagon and dropped a missile or sent a stinger into the, or whatever they sent in, it was obviously something big, I don't know, boom, they blow it up with a cruise missile, perhaps. I don't know. Why didn't they use a cruise missile instead of this fighter is another question. But I would suspect that the fighter pilot, if there was a fighter pilot and the whole thing wasn't just a missile from the beginning sent from someplace else, which would make more sense to me, the fighter pilot, I think's life would be in jeopardy.
Well, yeah, who says the guy's still alive? You don't know that.
I'm just saying.
More important is, what happened to the people on Flight 93?
Well, you know, there was one
77 or whatever it was. Listen to this. I want you to listen to this audio clip or this video clip of Donald Rumsfeld. You've probably heard this one before. It's a Freudian slip as he's giving a news conference.
Have a sense if we imagine the kind of world we would face if the people who bombed the Vestal in Mosul, or the people who did the bombing in Spain, or the people who attacked the United States in New York, shot down the plane over Pennsylvania.
Oops. Did you hear that? Shot down the plane in Pennsylvania. That's Donald Rumsfeld. Freudian slip. Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. So,
if the plane was shot down,
don't you think they'd find some of the bodies or something? But I don't know. There was the other report that the plane never
left.
Know, that whole thing was just rigged up. They landed someplace. They took all the people off, and of course they're probably in Gitmo. I mean, who knows?
I actually followed this whole 93 story about who owned that land. There was a big dispute about the memorial, and I did follow that trail for a while. I got bored with it. But there's a lot of weirdness going on with the ownership of that, of the land that, where it crashed. And then next to it, you know, there was, the people want to build a memorial. There's all kinds of stuff going on with that. That's weird. I think it's that and, World Trade Center building number 7. Those two really, looking into that, investigating that, those are the ones that really, where I said, all right, you know, we certainly need a brand new full investigation. You know,
well, whatever the case, I think you might as well take the whole thing back to TWA Flight 800. That I think
you
is
could.
Number.
You probably could. You probably you could.
Because that's still a suspicious. Yeah. Because they still have the guys reporting, and you know, nobody ever talked to me because they didn't do a very thorough investigation of asking the eyewitnesses anything. They just made their report that it was this tank blew up, and then they still have, I guess, the model of the thing someplace. They have all the pieces in some warehouse, and I guess they're still looking it over.
But to tell you, John, yeah, I'm definitely a truther. I've just heard too many really smart people look at this from too many different angles. And the thing is, you know, I just turned 44, and I really have come to the realization that, and this of course is the big thing. This is the big awakening, the big oh wow moment is when everything that you've been taught from a small child, that there actually is very true evil in the world. And there are people who are just evil and will do evil things. So
So you'd put Rumsfeld in that group.
yeah, I think he'd be close to the top of the list. No, but there are just evil, evil people. And I've had a couple. I remember when I first got into business, you know, because I'd been working in entertainment, which, you know, you get like a check, but never really ran my own company. And we had our own company. And, you know, there were people who would come in who would seem like the most credible, and they were credible. And they just fuck you. People will just fuck you. I mean, for money, they will do anything they want. Anything. They will lie and cheat and fuck you. And so this evil is out there. Yeah. Now I would have to say that you could pretty much query me on anything about in regards to 9/11, and I could probably answer it.
Okay, well, we'll have to do that.
fuck, no, I'm not going to ask this guy anything.
I'm sure that there'll be some questions coming in.
The latest thing that was in the paper was, I loved this one, because, you know, of course, the NIST, which is, it's part of the administration. It's not like some, you know, it's an organization that he puts together. So they came out with their Building 7 report, which, of course, was just laughable. But they had to go a little bit further. And I think it was yesterday. They were saying that the reason why the steel melted in the world, in the first time in history, and they actually say this is an unprecedented event. This has never happened before. It's amazing what happened, John. You won't believe it. The actual magnetic structure of the steel in these buildings was somehow modified, probably due to age or something else. Road and weather conditions may vary your mileage.
Oh, here we go again.
Seriously. No. This is coming from the government. No. This is coming from the government, dude. Listen to me. This is not from me. This is the ridiculous lengths they're going to cover this up by saying, well, normally, of course, jet fuel doesn't burn hot enough to melt steel, but these steel beams, something had happened this is the government saying something happened to them magnetically, and they were sufficiently weakened so they were able to start melting at 500 degrees. This is the government now saying this. Now, that's ridiculous.
It's a new mercury alloy.
It's ridiculous. It's freaking stupid, and it's insulting.
Well, I think that leaves us hanging.
Yeah. Anyway, your homework, John, is you should go look at Rosie O'Donnell's weblog. Yeah, you laugh. I know Rosie O'Donnell. I've known her for a long time. Actually, I got her first gig on VH1.
Give me the summation, and I'll go look at it.
She has a guy on whose name is William Rodriguez. William Rodriguez was a caretaker of, I don't know which tower, one of the two towers. And his office was on sublevel one. There were six levels. So he was on the highest level of the sublevels. And before the plane hit the building, there were multiple explosions in the basement.
Yeah, no, this has been documented by a bunch of people that heard multiple explosions.
Right, but it's not in the official conspiracy theory known as the 9/11 report. They interviewed him. They didn't write anything. He gave him like 15 other names to talk to. One guy who was one level below him, who his job was to restock the vending machines. All his skin was burned off from the explosion. He lived, but he came up. Actually, I don't know if he lived or not, but he came up with his skin hanging off. And you know, there's tons and tons of eyewitness accounts of this. And there's all this. You know, it's all over the place. It's unhideable. You know, and that's. Okay, so maybe that's my or the alternative conspiracy theory, but the 9/11 Commission report, which I have right here in my bookcase, doesn't mention anything about that. Not even, you know, the mention of, you know, some people thought. Nothing. I can hear you sliding over to my side of the fence.
Is that's interesting about this is that if let's assume that all the truthers were right and this was a Nuremberg, what they burnt down the Reichstag, I think, in Germany.
Pearl Harbor. Call it Pearl Harbor, the new Pearl Harbor.
So you get everybody all jacked up in one way or another. The thing, because it's such a ridiculous event, you know, to drop these two buildings that were just in the middle of town, and they're one, two of the biggest buildings in the world, and it took a lot of effort and planning, obviously, to make this work. If the truthers are right, it's almost like saying, "Look, I wonder how outrageous we can get with the American public to see how, you know, before they realize that they're just being suckered left and right." It's just that, you know, that concept that somebody, that a group of people, let's say, you know, whoever, the foreign relations crowd or whatever you want to, whatever they are.
The Council of Foreign Relations, yes.
You know, which includes Obama.
The Trilateral Commission, yes.
Keep going. All these crazy things. I remember reading about this stuff in the 60s.
When it started. That's when it was your duty. You were on duty, John C. Dvorak. You should have stopped that shit then. You let it slide.
I was buffaloed. Yeah. Anyway, so it's almost like a comedy act at this level if what you're saying is true, because it's almost like saying, well, how dumb are these people? Let's do this and let's do that. I mean, it's almost to the point where you can almost suspect Obama himself as part of the whole grand scheme of things.
Thank you.
It's like, let's see if we can get a black guy in. Oh, we can get a black man elected president. I think we can do that. Well, okay, well, let's change it a little bit. Let's make it a black guy with a ridiculous name.
Yes, exactly. and just to fuck with everyone, we'll make his middle name Hussein, just to mess with everyone. John, you know what? I'm so happy to hear this. You are finally seeing the light, my brother. You are waking up. You're finally seeing what, and you know what? You know why? That they absolutely thought, because they had all the media in their pocket. They have, radio, newspapers, books, television primarily. Television is a hypnotic medium. I've been in it long enough to know how it works. You can absolutely bullshit anything you want for any reason. People will buy it because it's on television. They still think it's true. But what they didn't understand, and most of these guys, you know, they might have a BlackBerry, which is simple enough for them to understand, but they do not understand the internet. They do not, they were not a part of this taking place. And this is what's happened. All this collective knowledge is, look at Google. You type in Rumsfeld plane shot down, and within 3 seconds, I've got, you know, this video of him, which is not doctored video of Rumsfeld talking about the plane in Pennsylvania being shot down. This collective information that we have at our fingertips, which is, of course, the next thing to go. You know, they're now realizing, oh shit, you know, more and more people are jacking into this and they're starting to catch on. And that's where they made the mistake, because absolutely, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is Obama's advisor on foreign affairs, read his book, John. Read his book. I'll look at the title for a second. He outlines all of this stuff, all of it. And these guys are huge on the Georgia thing. Yes, it's orchestrated, absolutely. And I totally believe they went out and looked for the Manchurian candidate. Absolutely. Now, they play both sides of the fence because they've also got McCain. And it's the same people. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, you can't lose.
They don't give a shit.
Your theory, there's a no-lose situation. Either one of these two guys gets in.
Yes.
You know.
Absolutely. They win no matter what. And they're saying the same things. You know, and right now, oh, this was so beautiful, man. I talked about this in a Daily Source Code. So, huge Antonovs have been spotted in Afghanistan. And these are Ukrainian registered Antonovs, which of course immediately explains.
It's a big monster plane. It's got like 8 engines and a million tires.
Yeah. And, so these are coming from the Ukraine, the place that, Vice President Dick Cheney visited during the Republican National Convention under the cover of all that hoopla. And they're unloading tanks, John. Tanks. Now, let me ask you, because you are a man of the world, what will you do with tanks in Afghanistan?
I don't know.
Nothing, because the Russians already proved that the tanks are ineffective in that mountainous terrain. They're unusable. However, the road to Iran is right there. And Iran is completely perfect for tanks. So this whole thing of, oh, let's move the troops out of Iraq. They got to go to Afghanistan. They're all going to Afghanistan because that's the ground force that's going to enter into Iran.
Wow, that's a good one. I haven't heard that one. That's not bad. I like that. So who says this? Is that your theory?
No. This is from, there's pictures.
No, I mean, is this your theory about they're moving to Afghanistan? I mean, guys, I never thought of the two-step process where Obama wants to move all the troops to Afghanistan.
They both do.
Yeah, they both do. But whose theory is this that we're moving stuff to Afghanistan so we can invade Iran?
Well, I can't say. I'm sure lots of people have seen this because you open up Google Earth and you look at the frickin' geography of it all. And you say, okay, I see where Georgia is. I see where Ukraine is. I see where Afghanistan is. Oh, isn't that interesting? Now, I know that tanks don't work in the mountains. I know that. This is well known.
All right. Okay. Now, so what's Brzezinski's book? I'll read it over the weekend.
You'll love this book. Hold on a second. Brzezinski's book. Don't you just love this collective? Here we go.
Brzezinski's book. Actually, yeah, this is Google. Do you want to shut down this thing, folks? Just shut down Google.
That's true. Oh, I'm really worried about Google. I am very worried about it. I'm worried about, you know, who's in charge over there. Let's be honest. Eric Schmidt looks pretty scary.
Well, he was with Sun Microsystems for a long time, and there's a lot of connection between Sun Microsystems and the agency.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? The Grand Chessboard is what it's called. America's primacy. Is it primacy or primacy? Primacy?
primacy, I think, I think you can go either way with it.
America's primacy and its geostrategic imperatives. Read this book.
All right.
Read this book. Everything that is happening now or is being proposed is described in this book.
Okay, I'll get it and read it this week.
And this guy is in cahoots with Soros. That, you know, so this is where all this money is coming from. Obama is like a $1 billion campaign at this point. It's huge money, huge. John, I love it.
Wow.
I love that sound. I love that. You know, let's stop the show right here because
the sound of silence.
No, it's not the sound of silence.
It's got me stumped again, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the sound of you actually going, "Hey, wait a minute. There might actually be something.
Okay.
Oh my goodness, there might be something to all of this." Yeah. Lots more where that came from. Because remember, no one's home, a lot of it next week.
I'm hoping.
Hey, and we didn't talk about it, but I hope people are okay in Texas.
That storm is really a whopper.
Yeah, that's massive. And of course, it gets coverage, but not the same type of urgency as Gustav got.
No, Gustav got more because of the New Orleans thing. And the fact it was during a convention that gave him an excuse to send Cheney to the,
Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. So, The interesting thing, you know, about the, I mean, this storm thing is like taking up the whole Gulf of Mexico and as it comes into, but the thing that always gets me about these storms is you go to CNN or any of these stations and they got these guys in the storm. Yeah,
Geraldo, but it's Geraldo Rivera is the funniest. Have you seen him? And his hair, and like a piece of the pier popped up and hit him in the leg. It was hilarious. I'm like, yeah, this is great. This is television.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow, this was one of my, I've never ended the show on such a high.
Well, good.
I shouldn't get used to it.
I'm going to go watch Cal hopefully beat Maryland.
All right, I'm going to take my daughter to Wagamama.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Wagamama?
No, what is Wagamama?
It's like a fast food Chinese, Vietnamese type place.
They don't have them here.
No, it's an English outfit. They got kind of like 50 of them or something. It's pretty big.
Huh.
All right. One of these days, you know, we're going to have to actually do a show midweek because something astronomic is going to take place.
Yeah, we can do it.
So I can gloat. Say, see?
Well, you haven't had many opportunities.
All right. Coming to you from Gitmo Nation East, my name is Adam Curry.
And from Gitmo Nation West, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We will talk to you again next week, right here on No Agenda.